Move to the next case of the morning, still morning. United States versus Toby Watson. And, did you guys sign?
Yes, Your Honor. It pleases the court. In this False Claims Act case, in a question of first impression, the district court ruled both that expert testimony was required as to two elements, and then in the same decision, because we didn't name an expert in discovery, dismissed the case on summary judgment. Now, the two elements that the court held expert testimony was required was that when a doctor prescribes a drug to a Medicaid recipient, that you have to explain that Medicaid, you need an expert to explain that Medicaid is going to pay for that prescription. Well, that is really, frankly, pretty hard to understand. I mean, first off, a jury understands that, you know, when if you're a Medicaid recipient, you get a prescription, you go to the pharmacy, present your Medicaid card, the pharmacy fills the prescription, Medicaid pays. And the judge said there's this mysterious black box and you need an expert to explain this black box process about how Medicaid processes claims. But that's not really the issue. The issue is, did that prescription cause the claim? And it did. I mean, for one thing, Dr. Watson presented evidence that Medicaid did pay for those prescriptions that Dr. King-Vassell prescribed. And it's not beyond a jury to determine. So the other element, which I think has some surface appeal but also incorrect, is that the district court held that you need an expert to explain that a prescription is not, whether a prescription is for an indication approved under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act or supported by one of these, any of these drug references referred to in the statute as compendia. Now, that kind of, and that definition is called a medically accepted indication, and that kind of sounds like medical malpractice, but it's not. It's a simple fact. Was the prescription, what was the indication prescribed, what was the indication for which that medication was prescribed, and then is that indication either approved by the FDA or supported by one of these compendia? And that's, in most cases, and in this case, that's a simple fact. And on page 16 of our brief, we have a chart that we've asked for judicial notice just for illustrative purposes, which shows that for Risperdal, there are six indications total. Three of them are approved by the FDA. Autistic disorder, irritability, bipolar 1 disorder, schizophrenia. Those are approved by the FDA. For children, only down to certain ages. So, for example, autistic disorder, irritability down to 5 years. The other one's 10 and 13. Well, for one thing, the Risperdal was prescribed to NB when he was only 4. Okay, so, and he wasn't diagnosed with any, in any event, with any of these diagnoses. Now, the shaded items are behavioral syndrome, mental retardation, Tourette syndrome, and pervasive developmental disorder. Now, those are not approved, they're not indications approved by the FDA, but they are listed in the compendia. And so then the question is, well, is that supported by the compendia? And that is primarily a legal question. It's a fact. Is it supported? Well, but in this case, it doesn't even arise because, as a matter of fact, as demonstrated by the records, the medical records, NB wasn't prescribed Risperdal for any of these indications. So it's a false claim, and you don't need an expert for that.
No, as I understand it, there's not any question this medicine wasn't being administered, is there? This wasn't a deal where she said she prescribed and et cetera and charged Medicaid and didn't give them the medicine. Is that the case or not?
You're correct. She did not. It's not that she was billed something that wasn't received. It's not that kind of a
billing for something that was actually administered.
Right.
It's just that you're saying, though, it shouldn't have been given to that particular patient.
What I'm saying is it's not covered under Medicaid, and Congress determined that. Okay.
It shouldn't have been charged. Medicaid paid for something, for a drug that technically did not come under what it was supposed to be used for, and therefore it shouldn't have been charged. Medicaid shouldn't have had to pay for it.
Right. It's not covered. It's not allowed to be paid for, and therefore it's a false claim. So we don't. It doesn't seem to us that expert testimony is required in this case.
Counsel, is your position that expert testimony, looking at this chart, the chart that you referenced on page 16 of the brief, it seems like there might be some things where expert testimony might be useful. So, for example, I agree, with regard to age, a lay jury can determine whether a four-year-old should be prescribed something where the FDA approval is only for 5 years and up. But whether or not the diagnosis would fit into any one of these particular indications, that seems like that might be where expert testimony might be required. So is your argument that here perhaps the district court should have taken a closer look at the case drug by drug or even the facts of this case to determine to parse out those where expert testimony may be required versus those that may not be?
I think the court certainly could have and maybe should have done that. Yes, Your Honor. And these indications or diagnoses, they are in the record. This drug is diagnosed for X indication, or this drug is prescribed for X indication. So I don't think that there is expert testimony, really. I mean, maybe an expert can come in and try and convince a jury that post-traumatic stress disorder is the same as bipolar 1 disorder, but, I mean, it's not. I'm into my rebuttal time, but I really want to also say that. And then I think this addresses your question, Judge Lee, is that even if an expert was required for either of these, we think the way that this came up, that we should have been given an opportunity to name an expert and proceed once the court determined that an expert was required in this question of first impression. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thanks. Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. This is a rather unusual case, Your Honor, in a lot of respects. It's a key TAM case, which I think are unusual by their nature. But this case is really a thinly disguised crusade by the appellant, and intimately involved with that is appellant counsel here because he spearheads the organization. And when I got this case in the office, when I looked at this and I immediately Googled key TAM, minor psychotropic medications, the first thing that popped up was the organization psychrights.org. And on that site, as we've listed in our briefs and in the record, there is a canned complaint that was followed in this case and pursued here. The objective of this is an attack on mainstream psychiatry. They are attacking how psychiatrists routinely, based on medicine, treat minors in the United States. They are seeking to intimidate through raising this as a sword that there is some sort of consequences that they are going to use these key TAM claims. They tried it in Alaska and it failed. They tried it in Illinois and it failed. That's the goal here of the appellant's case. This is not a case where they went out and said, geez, we know Dr. King is doing something wrong. In fact, when you look at the record here, Your Honor, they solicited someone through a newspaper advertisement. The appellant, Dr. Watson, who's a psychologist and not a psychiatrist, had learned of this process and this particular theory of how to try to intimidate psychiatrists through a webinar that the appellant counsel puts on, and therefore he took out an ad in a Sheboygan newspaper that generically said that people may be able to share in financial proceeds, this is all on the record, if they come forward and help him. He never met the patient. He's never treated the patient. His only connection is to have met the mother and enter into an agreement to share any recovery with the mother and his counsel at the district court level. He used an authorization that indicated he was getting the records for treatment purposes when, in fact, he readily admits that wasn't the purpose. And instead, the purpose was to find someone, and just by random luck, Dr. King is the target of this. Because they know that this is how mainstream psychiatry is applied and practiced in the United States. There is the widespread use of off-label prescribing. Because for a variety of reasons, and if the court wants me to go through it, the FDA only approves purposes for very specific things that are tested. And once it's approved, that medication can legally be used throughout the United States for any legitimate reason, as long as it meets the standard of care. So there's no requirement that...
If it's off-label, you mean?
Yes, if it's off-label, and that's, and in fact, even Dr. Watson, who does not prescribe, readily admits he realizes that off-label prescribing of medication in the United States is far more common than on-label prescribing, because that's the mechanism. Once a pharmaceutical company has a medication approved through one particular purpose, they don't go back and get it reapproved again. Instead, it's medical science through medical literature. And one of the things here that's a little bit misleading is there isn't like this list that's exclusive that says Medicaid will only pay for these medications. The process, and this is why the district court recognized expert testimony was necessary, is that each state sets up its own formularies that they apply in approving benefits. And they can look to the FDA, they can look to the compendiums, and the plaintiff has cited you to 42 U.S.C. 1396R-8, sub G, sub 1, sub B, sub I. And in that, it doesn't say that the states have to rely and can only use those materials. In fact, there's 2I, there's II, which actually allows the state to utilize peer-reviewed learned treatises or peer-reviewed medical articles. Well, that's a whole ocean of everything that's published in professional journals where other physicians have reviewed and attested to the credibility of it. But that's what comes out every month for a whole host of the medical profession. States are allowed to utilize that.
Is it vary from state to state?
It can. States are, in fact, directed under the statute here that the plaintiff is relying upon to form committees made up of physicians, pharmacists, and other people, and to come up with these formularies. One of the things, and that's where Judge Steinmiller clearly indicated, there is a mystery. There's a black box, because what happens is Dr. King wrote a prescription, and then somewhere down the line, the state paid, and then the federal government was asked for reimbursement. Why the state paid, and a whole host of other things, and I'll back up in a second with that. The district court recognized, and there's a little bit of a disconjunction here, the plaintiff is asking you just to assume that the fact Dr. King wrote a prescription to a patient who otherwise calls for Medicaid means that it's going to be submitted to Medicaid. Well, that's not true. First of all, when a doctor makes a recommendation for treatment, it can either be accepted, and in the case of a pharmaceutical, it can either be paid out of pocket, it can be submitted under any other program. There's nothing that says it has to be submitted under Medicaid, and there's nothing in this record, not the affidavit from the mother, Christine Maxwell Meyer. She does not say Dr. King told her to submit it as a Medicaid claim. All she said is that Dr. King gave her the prescription. Where the mystery then continues, or the district court judge was focusing in on, is once you get to Walmart, the pharmacy, and there's a pharmacist there, they took that prescription, they filled the prescription. They're the ones who handed and dispensed the medication. It's Walmart that actually submitted the claim. And that's where the judge says, someone's going to come in here and testify how what Dr. King did led to this. And that's where he says there's a gap in the proof of this case. One of the gaps. There's actually several gaps, but that's one of the gaps. Because You've got a pharmacist at Walmart. Is he, you know, I mean, why isn't he here? That's part of the process.
But that doesn't require expert testimony. Then he just, that's just a matter of not being able to prove a fact to put before a jury or to the judge, right?
Well, except for it does need, because what lay people know to be covered or not covered, that's not true. And Dr. Watson, who's a psychologist but not a psychiatrist, he readily admits he doesn't know how the state ends up paying these claims. He doesn't know the process. So she walks in with a pharmaceutical with a prescription. Something happens at Walmart. What happens at Walmart, we don't know, but it gets passed on to the state. The state has a review process. They have their formularies. Someone would have to explain through expert testimony what the formularies are, how they were founded, how they are applied in Wisconsin. And clearly, then the state goes ahead and pays this, so they apparently were involved in this process. And then it's submitted onto the federal government for reimbursement. And what the district court judge said is, there's a gap here. There's no requirement. Strictly, the fact that a prescription was written does not equate to a submission of a claim. There has to be some testimony to say how that is to be tied together if the plaintiffs were going to prevail on that. And Judge Steinmiller correctly decided that there is a large gap in the evidence here, and specifically how these claims are in fact processed in the state of Wisconsin, for this to qualify as something that Dr. King supposedly knew was the submission of a false claim. The other thing is Dr. King gets no money for writing these prescriptions. She would have been paid the same amount of money for seeing this patient whether or not the mother took the prescription or not. She gets no reimbursement whatsoever for writing a prescription or from the pharmaceutical companies, the pharmacies, or anyone.
Before you go, I'd want to just check one thing. As far as the expert, would an expert come in and say that shouldn't have been prescribed?
Well, I would bring in an expert. The plaintiff would have to do that.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes, the plaintiff would have to bring in an expert who is knowledgeable on the reimbursement process and how Wisconsin applies its formulary.
And then say that shouldn't have been done or something.
They would have to prove that. That's what the district court held.
Okay.
Thank you.
We've got 2 minutes left.
I've got a lot to try and cover. I think the most important thing is, there are two important things. One is that this is to enforce the congressional limitation of coverage of off-label prescriptions to those that have a specified level of scientific support as referenced in one of these compendia. And they're listed in there. And it's just a matter of comparing the indication with the listing and whether or not if there is a listing and whether it's supported. And I think that's the most important thing. There are many things that the states get to decide under Medicaid options, but this is not one of them. Congress, in order to protect the public from basically doctors going along with pharmaceutical company misrepresentations, said we're only going to cover them, not just the protect the health, but the Treasury, we're only going to cover prescriptions that have this support. And it's not a question of what psychiatry practices, it's a question of what the coverage is. And we don't think that requires expert testimony. The compendia are incorporated by reference in the statute. In this case, it's basically a statutory interpretation question. The question is, in terms of that, what was the indication? That's a fact. Is it covered under? Is it supported in one of these compendia? That's really also a fact.
Is the compendia supposed to, is in your view, if it doesn't say this can be used for such and such, then it's a violation?
And the point isn't that a doctor is allowed to prescribe anything off-label. We don't dispute that. But if they prescribe for an indication, an off-label indication that's not supported, they've caused a false claim. It's really, I think, one of the problems of this case is it's so simple, really.
Okay. Thank you. We'll keep it simple then. All right. Well, appreciate both counsel. We'll take case under advisement.